This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Tanya Johnston from Berkeley, California. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 14th, episode 1587. Good morning, Horse World.
Hey, Santa, what's shaking, man?
Dancing through the snow.
By the way, congratulate me this Christmas. I'm going for it. No antidepressants.
Somebody ought to teach that little humbug some Christmas spirit.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Well, I didn't know how appropriate that opener was with who we have on today. We have Tanya here with us. Tanya Johnston is a mental skills coach and is filling in for Jamie this morning. Jamie's on vacation skiing, actually, with the family in northern Arizona. So welcome, Tanya. Thanks for filling in.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I was listening. I like that little opening.
Yeah. No antidepressants needed when you have Tanya around. That she's going to fix that.
Oh my goodness, that was hilarious.
And no
I heard some Charlie Brown or right?
Yeah, we love all the cartoon characters in our openers. Jennifer has fun finding them and putting those together. Well,
awesome.
Tanya is going to join us today. We're going to have a fun day and talking about the mental side of riding. We have a lot going on in the show today, and then we have some announcements regarding Tanya for the future as well. And we're going to learn more about her in just a minute. But Jennifer is first going to tell us what's coming up on today's show.
Coming up on today's show, we're going to be decking the halls with author Natalie Keller Reinert, who's going to talk a little bit about a great gift idea for you or someone on your list. And then our clever co-host Tanya is going to get inside our riding heads as she answers listeners' queries. And for a fantastic finish, Horse and Country TV's Victoria Spicer has the European Report. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, it is time for our Daily Whinnies. My Daily Whinny goes out to auditor Nicole Lutzma on her engagement. Congratulations, Nicole. She was so funny. She was on Stable Scoop. We were doing our Year of the Listener, and she was one of the listeners we interviewed on Stable Scoop about 6 weeks ago. And she was talking about the fact that her boyfriend and her have been hanging out and being boyfriend-girlfriend for about 6 years. And I busted his chops for not getting on with it and actually putting a ring on her finger. And then all of a sudden, she announced in the auditor room yesterday that he listened to the episode, and shortly after that, he did put a ring on her finger. So I feel like I am totally responsible here for bringing people together.
That is the best story.
So I'm taking full credit, Nicole. He has nothing to do with it. I just pushed him into it. Now, on the other hand, if it doesn't work out and you're divorced in a year, I had nothing to do with it. That was all on him. So just clarifying that right now.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to add my congratulations to Nicole.
All right,
it's a wonderful, wonderful marriage and lasts very beautiful, long, happy time. So,
You know, Jennifer and I are at almost 30 years. So, So, Nicole, you have to, that's your goal right there. After 30 years, then you're both too tired to give up. So, that's what happens at that point. All right, your turn.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, my Daily Whinny, I think, is going out to my family on the East Coast who we're not going to get to see. For this holiday season, but we're certainly thinking of all of them and sending our love and hopefully planning. Well, I will see part of them. We're going to be going to Arizona, see my dad and Patricia. And then mother-in-law, father-in-law in hopefully in the summer. So, but they're awesome fans of mine and my work. So I gave them the link to listen this morning. And if y'all are listening, hi, love you. And
hi guys.
See you soon. Yep. A lot of my West Coast friends are like, okay, well, does it become something we can listen to later?
Yes, they can listen to the recorded version later in the day.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So it's all good.
It shows you what dedicated friends you have. They're not even going to get up earlier for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-mm.
And we got to thank Tanya because you're California, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So. Yep. Out here in the Bay Area.
She was up a little early.
I'm looking outside at dark blackness, which for horse, I know everyone feels me on this one, that anyone who's involved with horses this time of year is rough because there's just so little of that precious daylight going on.
Now, let's talk a little bit about you. You're a rider and have been for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. My whole life. The only time I took off was in college, actually. I played volleyball. That was my alternate sport. But other than that, and I rode some endurance horses my senior year. I went to UC Santa Cruz, and senior year I met up with a woman who did endurance horses, and she, you know, I was whatever I was, 20 years old, 21. She was probably 65, 70, and we would go out on these rides, and she would routinely kick my butt, and it was so much fun. I'd never done anything like that. We'd be like up and down things that my eyes got big, and I just would like lean back, throw my feet out in front of me. But yes, but I have ridden and shown in the hunter jumper world my whole life. This year, in fact, you know, did a whole bunch of showing and won some medal finals and went out east and went to Capital Challenge. And so love the fact that my hobby, if you can call it that, it's such a big passion, but also dovetails in with my work. So I don't, you know, work with people on their riding skills. I obviously focus on the mental skills, but it all comes together in such a great way. So I'm really fortunate for that.
Now, how long have you been doing how long have you been an equestrian mental skills coach?
Yeah, so I hung my shingle, as they say, way back in 93.
Oh, wow.
I started working.
I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah. That's when I finished my master's degree and right out of the gate. Luckily, my master's program, we had a lot of applied work. So and also being that I was already riding, I knew a lot of people. So right away, I was able to start with clients and helping people out with their mental approach and their preparation routines and all of that. So I was sort of off and running and worked with a really wide variety of athletes in the first probably 5 or 8 years, I'd say, of my practice. So in the 90s, you know, as the internet was just getting started, and then the internet has allowed me to really hone in, I'd say the last 15 or so years, really I work pretty much only with equestrians because of the fact that I have clients all over the country and in Canada and clients in Europe and all that kind of thing now. But what's enabled me to do that is that, you know, word of mouth and all the writing that I do and everything reaches such a more wide audience. So that's been great. So I've been able to really just specialize in this world, which is makes me nothing but happy. But I do occasionally I'll have someone's, you know, husband or someone will contact me like, oh, you know, so-and-so's brother does hockey. Can you help him? And so I do enjoy that as well. And occasionally I'll take on someone in a different sport, which is always, excuse me, fun for me. Just to learn about other sport, you know, learn about new sports, whether it's hockey. I had a surfer last year, you know, a little bit of this. It's a little bit of variety. It's good for everyone, don't you think?
What's the hockey guy wanting to know? My biggest fear would be, how do I keep my front teeth? That would be my biggest fear right there in hockey.
Yeah. No, and it's true. That's a hard sport. Poor thing. He did get a concussion at one point, and at least the research with all of that and how they are able to assess risk has improved a lot. But boy, those sports, I mean, ours as well.
Yeah, right. I mean, ours is
part of it, you know?
Yeah. Ours is right up there in the most dangerous list.
It does.
And Tanya, you'll know her also maybe by her book, Inside Your Ride. You've probably seen it if you've been to any tech shop looking at the bookshelf. You're going to see Inside Your Ride, and that's Tanya's book. When did that come out?
That came out in 2012.
2012. Okay. So, and that's still available on Amazon and all the places?
Everywhere. Yes. The places. Paperback. And also there's a Kindle version, an ebook version. So that's been great. And I
know
really
our listeners,
hearing from people.
Our listeners talk a lot about the mental side. And of course, that always comes up when you have conversations on Facebook and things, because everybody has fears, right? We all do. And it's, you know, it's how you deal with them that matters. And so if you know somebody this holiday season that that you think would benefit from this, this is a great book. This is the one book that you should read if you have any kind of fears or have any challenges in the mental side of your riding, then I highly recommend Inside Your Ride. It's available on Amazon. I'm just looking here. They have it in Kindle or paperback. So both.
Yep.
Right on Kindle. Yep. Right on Amazon, so you can get it right there. So definitely check that out. And your website is what?
It's really tricky. It's my name.
Oh, okay.
No. When I was back in the day when it was first getting started, I was like, well, what's going to be the easiest thing for folks to remember? So it's just my name. So TanyaJohnston.com is my website.
And it's not Johnson, it's Johnston, which I always have to think about too. Every time I have to talk to you, I'm like, is it Johnson or Johnston? You know, so it's S-T-O-N, Johnston.
S-T-O-N, exactly. So that's the easy way.
We're going to answer some listener questions here today as we go along. We have two listeners coming up that are going to come on and talk to you in person, and then we had gotten a bunch of listener questions for you. But what I wanted to mention, and we have an announcement to make, is that we have two announcements to make, actually, today. The first is, and this is official as of yesterday, that everybody knows that we've been doing what's called the Plaidcast on weekends. It's one of our weekend editions of Horses in the Morning here put out by Plaid Horse. Piper, Clem, and Sissy are on there, and they've been doing some great episodes of the Plaidcast. Well, they are going to be taking that as its own show starting in January. So the Plaidcast will be a new weekly show. It'll be similar in vein to what they have been doing. They're going to be talking some college riding. They're going to be talking about Hunter Jumper World. They're going to be, you know, talking fashion and everything that they do over at the Plaid Horse Magazine. But you are also going to be taking one of those slots, aren't you? So that's the other exciting news.
Yes, I'm really excited. Yeah, so we'll have an Inside Your Ride, the podcast, coming once monthly to the Plaidcast. So I'm super, super, super excited for that and planning my first show.
Now, this has been in the works. I'm going to throw Tanya under the bus here a little bit. This has been in the works. How long have I been bugging you about doing this? About 5 years. So it's been a long time that I've been bugging Tanya about doing a show. Because, I think the topic is really important and really needed. I knew that it would be a good addition to the network and that the Horse Radio Network listeners would benefit from it. So I'm very excited that you were able to partner up with the Plaid Horse and make it part of the Plaidcast and beyond once a month. I think it's going to be invaluable to the listeners. So,
yay, I'm so excited. I know you have such a wonderful group and it's such a family of listeners, and I'm excited to get to know them and hopefully do some things that are hopefully inspiring and get people thinking about what they can do to support themselves in a really healthy way.
How do you want to set up your show? How's it going to be broken up?
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a guest. So each show, I'll have a guest, probably a rider or a trainer. And for example, in January, we're starting with John French, four-time world champion hunter rider. You know, anyone in the hunter jumper world knows who he is. He's a brilliant hunter rider and has had a long, very successful career. And like anyone who's been in something for a long time, it's had its ups and downs. And hopefully we'll hear some of the insights from him about how he's gotten himself through some of those challenges. And I think a lot of people assume with anyone, you know, John included, when they're successful and when you see them with a really long career, you think, oh, you know, they're just in it. Everything goes well for them. It's easy for them. But I like, and in the book also, it's sort of a theme of using some of these luminaries or some of these, you know, high profile folks and showing that everyone's working on sort of the same things. Everyone's thinking about their confidence and how to get through rough patches and how to come back from injury and all those kinds of things. So that'll be super exciting. So we'll have a guest every month. And then I'll also have a little segment about inspiration of just things that I've come across that I'm finding interesting, whether it's a book, whether it's an app that I think is useful, something people can use to as a sort of springboard for their own mental skills. And keeping things fresh, because that's important. Sometimes people dial things in, but then, things can get tired and stale, and you can get used to them, and then they sort of lose some of their effectiveness. So it's important with your mental skills to stay on it and keep creative and keep a life to them. And then the third thing we'll do is a question and answer segment. So we'll hopefully either have a live caller, or we'll answer questions that people have submitted. So I'm hoping that people will start already now submitting some questions, and we'll get some ideas of things that we can talk about in January. But I really enjoy that. I really enjoy the interactive part, and hopefully we'll be able to figure out people calling in and being able to have some great conversations with folks about their mental skills.
Very good. We'll talk more about, well, we'll actually do some of that today. We have some planned for you. So we'll get a little taste of what that's going to be like coming up in future months.
Great.
All right. Very good. And we're very excited that the podcast, you know, I was joking with them yesterday with Piper that they've grown up now. Now they're teenagers and they're going out on their own and they're going to have their own show. And I told her after a year, then she's going to be an adult. So right now she's going to be a teenager for a little while and then she can be an adult again. So, but I'm very proud of them. They've worked hard, they've gotten sponsors and they've made it happen. So I'm very excited for them as well. And that'll be coming up in January. I have another announcement about another show later today that we'll tell you about as well. But first we have to get to our first guest. I'm excited to bring on a writer. She is an author. Her name is Natalie Keller Reinhart, and she was the author of the Eventing series, the Alex and Alexander series, and other novels for equestrians. But they have a special project that they did called Deck the Stalls, and I want to hear all about that because it sounds kind of interesting, and it's a collaboration. Good morning, Natalie.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us today, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, now, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, it's 75 degrees and sunny in Florida, so I'm looking forward to Christmas, as always, in Orlando.
Yes, we are, too. We'll actually be in Orlando on Saturday. We're coming down from Ocala to TSO. We're coming down to see Trans-Siberian Orchestra on Saturday, so we'll be there. Well, now, Deck the Stalls. What is it?
Deck the Stalls is a compilation of all original stories about horses and people that we came up with as a team. I was approached back in July, which, believe it or not, is really late to put together a Christmas project in the publishing world. And so Jessica Burkhart, who wrote the Canterwood Crest series, a very popular middle grade tween series, came to me and said, hey, I've always wanted to put together a Christmas anthology and donate the proceeds to charity. Do you want to do it with me? And of course, the answer was yes, even though I had no idea how I was going to fit that into my schedule. But we worked it out. I talked to a whole bunch of writers, gathered some of my absolute best friends in publishing, and said, hey, can you write a story in 2 months? And most of them said, no. And I said, please. And they said, okay, for you. And we even gathered a couple extra along the way. So what we ended up with are 8 stories that are written with every audience in mind. So mostly towards a middle grade, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14-year-old protagonist. Just generally from children to adults, stories about the holidays, about horses that everybody can relate to. And then all the proceeds for it are going to Old Friends, which is the retirement home for thoroughbreds that has several locations around the United States.
Yeah, I think that's a great cause, by the way. That's a terrific cause. We've had him on many times, and we've talked about a lot of the horses that are there at Old Friends. So when I saw that, I was like, yes, that's a good, I'm glad you picked that one.
It was such an easy choice. We were both thinking it, both Jessica and I. She said, what charity do you want to do? And I said, we have to do the Old Friends. And she said, that's what I was thinking. So I'm really excited. You know, it's so exciting with Old Friends getting charismatic in right now. I know he was such a favorite of mine when I was a kid watching horse racing, and to see him come home and go to Old Friends this week has been really exciting. So I'm thrilled that we're able to contribute to Charismatic and all the other horses that live at Old Friends. So exciting.
That's an awesome cause.
We were there 6 years ago or something when he first really started doing that. It was so tiny, and they maybe had 20 horses, and now there's hundreds. It's a whole different ballgame now.
Right. That's awesome.
That's what horses do, right? There's two, there's three, and then there's 100.
That's right. That's true. Well,
turn your back and you look out in the pasture, like, yeah. Oh.
Horse girls do have a collection problem, a collecting problem. So now, tell us about what did you write for this particular group of stories?
So I wrote the last story in the collection. I think it's called Working Students, but right now I'm trying to blank on what it ended up being called. Titles are not my strong suit. That's why so many of them are just one word. but it was a prequel to my Ambition and Pride and Forthcoming Courage, which is a trilogy of my Eventine series. So if anybody's read any of those series, they know that the main character, Jules, has always struggled as a working student, and now she's trying to make it on her own as an independent trainer. And the struggles of growing up a working student, you know, at a barn with lots of people that should be your peers, but, you know, because they have their own horse and they have their own lives and your money stalls while they're riding, it doesn't really work out that way. And so I wanted to give a little glimpse of what that life is really like. So I set it back with 12 or 13-year-old Jules and a Christmas story about her and just kind of her, what made Jules who she is as an adult, you know, is this really driven equestrian who doesn't really let anybody get close to her. And it's not a sad story, but it's not a traditional Christmas story either, but I just wanted to like delve deeper into that character, and this gave me a cool opportunity to do that.
Did you have her broke and eating ramen noodles every day? Because that's really what I remember about working students.
She actually does that in one of her adult books.
Hopefully, her parents were helping out.
Yeah, at that age, anyway.
But, you know, when she was 12, her mom was still feeding her dinner.
So. Okay, good. Jennifer, we were talking about it. Yeah. We were talking about working students. And Jennifer, her first working student job was making $90 a week, and, you know, with no refrigerator. And we were comparing working student stories about the days when you made nothing and you pretty much lived on ramen noodles.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Well into my 20s, I was doing that.
You're an author. You might even be doing it into your 30s. It's
Now I eat ramen from a Chinese takeout place.
So oh, there you go. You graduated.
Oh, see? Yeah.
Tell us about the Eventing series. What's that about with Jules?
The Eventing series is set in Ocala. And it opens up with Jules at 22. She has her own farm, kind of out. You guys are familiar with Ocala, you know, way out the western side, way out in Levy County, where it's kind of dry and there's a lot of cows.
Yep.
But it's close. It's almost there. You know, you're on your way if you get up to Levy County. And I lived out there once on a dirt road, off a dirt road, off a dirt road. And so it's kind of writing from experience and memory there. But, you know, it's about somebody who's trying to make it on her own and finding out that life isn't about making it on your own, that you have to admit that you need help and you have to let other people into your life. And that's not easy for Jules. Like I said, she started out as a working student at a rich barn. So she's used to being nobody and getting help from nobody but her trainer. And she really just wants to prove the world wrong. She's a girl with a chip on her shoulder. And when I first wrote the book, I wrote three versions of it. And every single one, I said, everybody's going to hate this book. This book is going to be the least popular book in the history of books. But I loved it. So I published it. And some people did hate Jules. I couldn't really help that. A lot of people really liked it. My favorite review for Ambition was something like the person posted on Amazon, something like, at first, I hated this book and this character, and then I realized that the author is a genius because she wants us to hate this character but also root for her. And I was like, yeah, she's a real person.
Wow.
We don't love everybody in real life, you know?
Welcome to the horse world.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. Like, how many actual heroes are there in the horse world? Let's be honest right now. We are cutthroat people. We talk behind each other's backs. We all think we have all the right answers and everybody else is making crazy mistakes right in front of us. And we talk about it. And so just that quest for reality is something that I really have in my book. And I really went after it with Ambition more than any of the other ones. And it's about eventing. It's about making it in a changing sport, about what the changes in 3-day eventing mean to our horses and to our businesses. It's a real version of a horse book for horse people, where people who are in this business are going to recognize these characters and these situations and, just really hopefully get some insight into their own lives and how they're approaching their training, or maybe they'll just laugh and enjoy it. But either way, I feel like it was something that was missing. You know, nobody had any books about eventing out there, so I went for it.
Well,
Natalie, where can people find, first of all, where can they find Deck the Stalls?
So Deck the Stalls is on all major and some minor online retailers. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iTunes. You can download it from any of those. Plus, you can get it from subscription services like Stripe if you're part of that. It's $2.99, and again, all of those proceeds are going to Old Friends. There's a paperback in production. Those take a little bit longer.
Okay.
But right now the ebook is $2.99, and it's out there. Anywhere that you buy an ebook, you can find it.
And where can you find your books? Do you have a website?
Yeah, my website is nataliekreinert.com. If you just type Natalie K. Reinert or Keller Reinert into Amazon, I'll pop up.
Okay.
You can find my books on Amazon. You can find my paperbacks through Barnes & Noble as well as Amazon. And you can order it through any book retailer. You can find them also at a lot of expos. If you go to anywhere where Caberton Equine Books is located, she does Equine Affair. They have booths at Quarter Horse Congress, all the big major events. Caberton always carries my books as well, and they might have a lot of signed ones left over from Equine Affair. I signed as many as I could before I left.
Okay, sounds good. Mm-hmm. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us, and what a great project, and what a great
gift idea.
We appreciate you being on, and we'll have you back.
It was a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you again.
All right, thanks, Natalie.
Bye, Natalie.
There's a lot more books being written in the horse world about the horse world that are novels that I have ever seen before. There are more, there's a lot of books like, you know, you did the book that's very helpful and, you know, it's really an instructional book, but now we're seeing a lot more novels than we ever have in the past coming out, which is a lot of fun. It means we're going mainstream
absolutely.
For a change. All right, let's take a break for our commercial, and then we're going to come back and we're going to put you to work, okay? First listener.
Sounds great.
All right, first listener.
Looking forward.
The Horse Radio Network is excited to announce a new partnership with the Fairfield Inn North by Marriott in Lexington, Kentucky for Road to the Horse and Rolex. The Fairfield Inn North is right off Newtown Pike and Route 64 near the Cracker Barrel and only 10 minutes from the horse park the back way, you know, the low traffic way. The Fairfield Inn North has spacious rooms that are being completely renovated now and will be ready in time for Road to the Horse. Plus, the Fairfield Inn North offers complimentary breakfast, a free Wi-Fi throughout the hotel, a huge free parking lot, a business center, indoor swimming pool and jacuzzi, outdoor patio with grill, a laundry facility, and much more. The Cracker Barrel is located right next door, and there are four other dining options available for breakfast, lunch, and dinner right around the corner. Just for listeners of Horse Radio Network, we have negotiated some great rates for you for Road to the Horse and Rolex. For Road to the Horse, we have the rate down from $160 to $120. If you're going to Rolex, we have the rate down to $199 from $260. There's a very limited number of rooms available at these rates, so call in your reservations as soon as possible. Search for Fairfield Inn North in Lexington, Kentucky. It's the one on Hackney Place. You must call in your reservation and ask for the Road to the Horse or the Rolex Early Bird Special. So that's the Road to the Horse or Rolex Early Bird Special. Search for Fairfield Inn North by Marriott. All right, Tanya, you're first. We're going to put you to work, and we have one of our auditors with us right now, and she is one of our most active auditors, and she actually stopped and visited us down here in Ocala at the studio. Right. It was nice. Her name is Rosie. Good morning, Rosie.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rosie.
Do you speak Spanish? We could do this whole thing in Spanish. Yeah.
We could.
Might not be very helpful, but we could.
Probably not. I'll be the only. Only a few of us will know what's going on.
Well, all right, Rosie. I'll let you guys talk.
So, what's going on, Rosie? What can we help you with this morning?
Well, I was very excited when I heard you were coming on because I wanted to speak with someone about some mental issues that I've had with my riding. I'll give you a bit of a background information. I got kicked in the chest about three years ago. I got kicked in the chest. And then, after that, I had another accident where my leg slipped into a carriage wheel and I almost broke my leg. So I've had a couple of accidents with horses. Mm-hmm. So I started like becoming afraid of riding, you know, anything with speed would scare me, you know, anything, you know, and I would get into it with my riding. I would hold the reins for dear life and I would get into this fetal position and I kept falling off because I would just get, you know, so it was like a repetitive cycle where my inability to not be afraid made it so that I would continue to have accidents.
Right.
And it was just a vicious cycle. So now it's like, you know, I love to ride. I love horses, but now it's a thing where, you know, I'm not afraid to get on, but I'm afraid that my fear, that I kind of, you know, go into as a default is going to ruin my ride or is going to, you know, it's going to make my horse fearful. So I don't ride as much as I used to. And that really is kind of stopping me from progressing where I want to go.
Right. Right. And so you own your own horse?
Yes, I do. And I keep him at home.
Okay. Well, the first question I have is a little bit around, you know, what kind of help and what kind of support do you have?
I was able to find an amazing, coach. Her name is Aubrey and she's been helping me kind of the way she explains things to me. You know, she has a lot of patience, you know, when I tell her, you know, hey, I'm very uncomfortable. She goes, all right, well, let's go back to something that you already know, you know, so that's helpful. But I only get her in the summer. I get her once a week. Once the winter comes in, because I don't have a lighted arena or anything like that, it kind of just stops.
So when are you riding in the winter? Do you ride just on the weekends or like?
Yeah, just on the weekends. Yeah. When I have light.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Do you, you know, the thing with when we start having a series of things happen, what can happen in our minds is a narrative starts to play, right? It's sort of like, well, you know, this has happened before. So we get worried. And like you said, it becomes sort of this negative spiral. Right. So we want to, instead of letting history kind of take the forefront and almost then we start relying on what's happened before to sort of inform how we're going to act next. You know, it's almost like, oh, well, the last time, you know, he spooked, I fell off. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes like, that's what's going to happen next time. Do you know what I'm saying? It's sort of like, right. Then we have to remind ourselves, wait a second, there are different ways to respond. I have choices about my behavior. I have choices about what I'm thinking instead of just going into that sort of habitual pattern. And so one of the first things that can be super useful is to actually, you know, sit yourself down and break out what are the things, excuse me, in my control versus out of my control.
Right.
Because fear often comes from a habit of focusing on things that are out of our control. So for example, if it's around, and I don't know if this is the case, but let's say we have a person whose horse does tend to look outside the ring a lot and tends to get distracted, and that's something that starts to create this fear. If then we are focusing on what's going on in, you know, the neighbor's property, or oh, the garbage truck is coming, or, you know, and our focus goes there, then we are completely compromising our ability to react effectively in that moment, right? Because we're totally consumed by this thing that's outside the ring that's out of our control, right?
Yeah.
So we've allowed into the front of our consciousness, and what we're concentrating on is something that is more random and sporadic, it even exacerbates that feeling of fear. So instead, in that kind of instance, it's like, okay, I'm going to be aware for sure, because awareness, you know, there's safety in that, but I'm not going to let that dictate my focus. So it's something I call notice versus focus, right? So I'm noticing, oh, I hear the garbage truck down the road. Okay, the garbage truck is coming. I'm noticing that. Now I'm going to focus on something, like what would be something that you would do in the tack that would help you feel secure and centered and really with your horse? What's something that you would think about or do?
I have to say, one of the things that has helped me a lot, I switched from English to Western, and having longer stirrups helped me feel more secure in the saddle. Like I was there because I had my legs wrapped around my horse, and that, and it gave me more of like that secure feeling where, okay, it's, you know, I have my legs more wrapped around him because I have longer stirrups now, so I can feel him better. So I feel like I'm much more secure.
Okay. So reminding yourself of that, let's say, so there's the garbage truck you hear, you know, so reminding yourself like, all right, how do my legs feel? Let me think about the length of leg that I have. Let me think about how I can feel my leg wrapped around him, even if it's just for an instant. You're then putting freshly in your mind something that gives you confidence. That feeling is something that you trust. That feeling is something that makes you feel secure, so that you've brought your focus back to something you're in control of, which is a part of your body, like positionally, or one of the aids you use to communicate with your horse. That's completely within your control, right? So that puts you in a much more proactive state of mind. So going back to what I was saying, the idea is that to help you with this and to really be clear about these choices is to go ahead and brainstorm a list of the things that are in your control versus out of your control, so that when they come up, you're quick to identify them. You don't accidentally, you know, start the cycle of, oh, the garbage truck, and now he's going to get distracted, and then he's not going to listen, I'm going to ask him to slow down, and he's going to ignore me. You know, you're catching that. You're saying, okay, garbage truck, okay, boom, what are my two things that I can do that are in my control? You know, does that make sense? So outside the ring distractions becomes like sort of a category, right? So that goes in our column of things that are out of our control. You know, the weather becomes another one. A lot of times in the winter, I'll have a lot of clients who we all kind of grapple with some of the same things. The winter comes, the colder temperatures, horses get a little more frisky. There's, you know, it creates that for everyone. There's a little bit of heightened energy, and sometimes in the horses that can end up feeling like tension, and then people being also cold and getting out of the car or to ride or what have you, and carrying this to their horses, it also can create that loop, that tension begets tension, you know, that whole thing. So anyway, the point being that weather is something that is a really prime example of something out of our control that we then want to go back and think, okay, how can I handle this? And so for sure, you know, and that's why I was asking about what help you have, because for sure there's the physical components of this. So, you know, what would your trainer tell you to do when your horse is feeling high? Would she say, oh, you know, if on a certain day you absolutely, you know, you feel a hump in his back, get off and lunge him for 5 minutes. I mean, would she say something like that? I mean, that's the kind of question where a good coach, a good trainer is going to give you some of those physical ideas as well, but we add those to the mental ideas and making sure that you're focused on things that are going to be helpful, that are ways of channeling your energy in really productive places, like what I was talking about, like the awareness you have in your leg and that kind of thing. So I would go ahead and break out, I would brainstorm those just as sort of a primer, right? As a way of keeping you extra aware of the things in your control and how they can give you that sense of confidence, for sure. Another question I have for you is, when things are going well, are you really taking ownership? So if you have a ride where you're like, you know what, I got a little scared, but I breathed my way through it and continued and had a good ride. Like, are those positive moments staying with you?
I don't think they stay with me nearly as long as the non-positive moments.
Yeah. Right. And you're, again, not alone. Yeah. That's super typical, right?
And I feel my non-positive moments last for days. Like, I, you know, I have a hitch in my walk. And
right. Yeah. And so developing sort of a habit around, you know, owning and replaying and being very, very conscious and aware of those success moments. So I would even encourage you to develop a little bit of a routine around, you know, ask yourself, all right, what are two things that happened in this ride today that I really liked, where I felt like I was being helpful and, to the situation, I was being appropriate, like I was communicating well with my horse. Where were our successes today?
Okay.
You know, like, for example, you know, and it can be small. We're not saying it has to be like, well, the entire ride I felt so confident and, you know, all that kind of thing. You know what I mean? It can be, you look for these small moments, but by owning them, and see, here's the difference. It's sort of very important, again, looking through this lens of how am I contributing to the partnership with my horse, that you not go home from the barn and say, God, my horse was just in the best mood today and we had such a great ride. I have no idea like where that came from. I want you understanding where it came. You know what I mean? Like, we want you to own the part that you can own so that you can create it, so that you can have more of an understanding of, wow, when I thought this way, or when I redirected my focus, it was actually super useful. Then you have so much more chance to create that in your next ride.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
That does make sense.
And I think that your trainer is a great resource in that as well. Sometimes it's hard to break into that habit of focusing on the negative, and if that's a conversation you can have, or, you know, hey, can you help me? My homework is to come up with two positive things after each ride. Can you help me figure out what one was? But definitely that's a habit that then will grow confidence, because you'll start to see how you impact the good rides and how you can create those moments more and more as you go forward.
Rosie, I feel for you. I'll tell you what, I feel for you. You know, Rosie's been down here and she knows that I have a bolting pony. When we're in the carriage, you know, it's something you think about all the time. And yet Jennifer has to keep reminding me he's bolted maybe four times in the hundreds of drives that we've done. That time, you're always expecting the next time, right? So that's hard to get past.
It really is.
Because you are thinking about, and I'm always looking, okay, what could he bolt it? And I'm actually creating some of the tension, right? And even when you're driving through the reins, you're creating that tension, and it's something that I have to be more aware of, just relaxing. And, you know, we haven't died yet, we're both still here, so but it is something, you know, even in driving we have to deal with.
Absolutely. It's all communication, right? And the horses are so sensitive. Mm-hmm. They feed off of that expectation or thought, or all of that becomes in the mix.
Well, Rosie, I hope that helped a little bit, and good luck with it.
It helped a lot.
Okay, good.
Oh, good. Well, good luck, Rosie. And that's just like sort of the tip of some of the ideas. And so please stick with it and keep being creative with yourself too, of how to break into that. Your love of your horse and your love of riding is stronger than any fear. So you got to really attach yourself to that and keep on.
Rosie, also
I can't wait till you have your show and you, because I'm going to be listening to it religiously.
Oh, good. Oh, great. Well, thank you. Yeah, I look forward to it. Yeah, and maybe we'll continue.
And also, Rosie, go get a copy of Inside Your Ride. If you don't have it yet, get a copy of the book. Because, it's funny because Tanya and I had this discussion because a lot of our audience are backyard horse owners or trail riders, and they don't compete. But everything that you deal with when riding your horse is pretty much the same, whether you compete or not.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. It is.
We all deal with the same things because the same things, because our horses all do the same stuff. So it's
They pretty much do.
Yeah. Thanks, Rosie. Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay.
Bye.
Happy holidays. Okay.
Happy holidays.
Okay. Bye.
But that's true, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't matter. Your episodes are going to apply to anybody who deals with a horse, whether it's riding or driving, or it's the same issues.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, it all goes together. And just in the same way that a lot of these sports psychology tools and mental skills techniques cross over to different sports. It's the same thing, right? It has to do with supporting ourselves and helping ourselves be present in the moment with confidence and with all of our talent available to us every moment.
I was a pretty serious tennis player for a long time. And there was a famous book, and I don't remember what it was because it's 30 years ago now, but there was a famous book that was really popular back then. And it basically...
The Inner Game of Tennis.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And in the first sentence in there, it says, tennis is 80% mental and 20% physical. And of course, when you're in your third set and you're tired, you don't believe that, but it really is. It's a mental game.
Yep.
Just like golf.
Absolutely.
Everything else. Yeah. All right. Yep. Let's talk to our next auditor that we have coming up here. We have Anne joining us, and she has been an auditor for a long time, too. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning.
Hi, Anne.
Thanks for hanging out with us this morning. Meet Tanya, and I'm going to let you two take it away.
Great.
Okay.
How are you this morning, Anne?
I'm good. Freezing up here in the Northeast.
Oh, okay. What state are you in?
I'm in New York.
Oh, okay. I'm in the Bay Area in California, so all we have is darkness and rain. But I would imagine it's far colder where you are. So tell me what we're working on today.
So I'll give you a little background. Too.
Yeah.
I've been riding for 16 years. I've been doing dressage for about half that.
Okay.
I have my own horse, but lately I've been noticing since getting out of college and everything that I've been very discouraged in the training process and everything because I feel like I'm not at a level where I should be given how much time and effort, everything into it, and it's been really hard to try to like find time to ride too, being up here and with work and everything. I've basically given up like competing because I just don't feel like it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound interesting, or you feel like you're not going to win, or what's not worth it mean to you?
I'm just not progressing the way I want to. I'm not at the level I should be at, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Being in it for so long, I feel like I should not be stuck at training level. I should be like at maybe third level or fourth level.
Mm-hmm.
And
So we've had that tough word should has come up a few times here in our short conversation. So is that a should? Shoulds are hard, right? They just make us feel nothing but bad. because it has to do with that we're not doing something we feel is our right. And so that judgment, do you think that judgment has that judgment been part of you? Is that coming from anywhere else? Do you have voice? Is there family or friends or trainer that's also in that mix of that should, or is that really coming from you solely?
I think it's like, it's partially coming from me and also coming from like my family and people who've put a lot of effort into and money into basically my training, and it's not, it feels like it's not paying off.
So if you're okay, so then we go to immediately my question is, what's your motivation for riding, period? What do you enjoy about it? Because if what you're there for is to progress and to move steadily up the levels and to compete and all of that, that's one thing. If you are there to enjoy your horse and enjoy those light bulb moments of, wow, we had a breakthrough today, or, you know, getting through a training moment with grace and composure instead of having a mental meltdown, you know what I mean? Like, that's a success. So to me, I would ask that you really give yourself some time to delve into your core motivation and to think about what do I enjoy? When I look at the days when I come home from the barn and I've just had such a blast and it's been so fun and I feel so fulfilled, you know, what's happened on those days? What am I looking forward to when I head out to the barn? Because in some ways we can look at the levels and, you know, what movements you're working on and all of that. It's a lot of that is sort of the trappings. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you could be on your horse in an arena, you know, on the moon, right? And there's no, it's just you and your horse. And in that kind of setting, what are you enjoying? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's important to kind of be able to identify, what do I love about riding if I take everything away and then I add things back to it, rather than continuing to look at it in this sort of, through this lens or many lenses of, you know, what my trainer thinks and what is appropriate for me to do at a show. Like, all of those are just different ways of looking at your riding through these different lenses. What I'm trying to say is, it's helpful to get to the core right now, because what's happening is your motivation is being affected. Yes.
Yeah.
The discouragement. Definitely. And yeah, that doesn't feel good. Right.
No, especially because I went to college for riding, and it was not a program that I was passionate about. It was hunter jumpers, and I'm like a dressage rider. So it was like, well, why am I doing this if it's not the field I want to be in?
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was the only option I had.
So as you look at, if I was asking, so let's just chat about that for 1 second. What do you love about riding?
Just being able to like be away from all the stress of my family, my career, my life, everything, just kind of just detach from the world and not have everything bombard me at once. And I just like being, basically I like being alone in the barn. I just like to like have the quiet.
Mm-hmm. So that, did you hear yourself answer that?
Mm-hmm.
Did it have anything to do with what level you're showing at?
No.
Yeah, right. And so, and that's a beautiful answer. I absolutely understand, you know, the partnership and the relationship and just that quiet and calm that you get from being with your horse is a wonderful thing. And the fact that it's away from the stress of the rest of your life. And right now, the way you've described it, it is still a stress. So it's like you've gone there to get away from stress. And yet, wait a second, I'm still judging myself and I'm still frustrated. So it's not even, it's not providing you with what you would really want to be getting from it right now. And I don't know then if that becomes a conversation with, you know, your supporters and like, hey, this is what I want to be doing. I don't, you know, I just want to ride. Like, let me, it's okay with me that I'm not going to show right now. It's okay that I'm going to keep working on some things that I've been working on. Like, that's all fine with me because I just want to be here and I want to be enjoying my horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've had like the discussions, especially with my mom, cause she's like one of the huge, like biggest supports of it mm-hmm. and financially too. And mm-hmm. I've come home in tears. Like I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know if I can afford this horse anymore. Like, she's not like a horse for the level I want to be at. And I'm like, but I'm like torn because she is like my first horse and I've loved her. I've had her for so long and I couldn't imagine selling her. And my mom like sees how much I struggle with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I would do, you know, and that's a whole other different level of stress when we have a partner in our horse that, you know, we've maybe grown beyond or our goals are different than what our horse can go with us, you know, on that journey, you know, that's a whole other issue. And that can be perhaps a part of what you're talking about. And I totally understand that the relationship is so important, with your horse. I think that getting, like I said, getting really in touch with where your motivation is and then you make choices from there rather than, wow, this is where I am. So I need to be motivated to do this, this, and this. So does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah.
So like, why do I want to be here? What do I want to be enjoying? And if it's that this relationship with this horse is so strong and so valuable to you, and maybe she can't move up levels, and then that's something you really have to look at and accept, right? And talk about. Like, yeah. You know what? I think it's going to be better if I just don't show her. I don't, you know, maybe that's the way to go. Or I don't know, you know, I'm not suggesting the answers. All I'm saying is I would sit down, put a circle in the middle of a paper, take a piece of paper, put a circle in the middle of it. And either put riding or put your horse's name or something. And then think of all of the reasons you love riding. What kind of rider you want to be? What do you enjoy most? What are the positive feelings and emotions you get when you're at the barn? And just like rays of the sun, like for each thing you think of, you're going to have a different, you know, like when you were in second grade and you drew a sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a different sort of line. And so maybe you have challenge and maybe you have friendships at the barn and maybe you have just peace and quiet and all of those things that come up. In this process, you're just going to be totally open to anything that comes up, right? You're not going to have any judgment about what factors you might be surprised by some of the things that come up. Because here's the thing is our motivation also changes over time. Just because we started with one motivation, you know, 8 years ago, it might have shifted, right?
Yeah, and our expectations
part
too.
Part of what I'm struggling with.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there's a part about let's understand what it is before you can accept what it is and have more peace in your life and in your riding. You have to first know what it is. So allow the brainstorming. You know, take a good half hour to do this. Let it sort of percolate, let things kind of marinate and you're like, okay, well, let me think about this and maybe go back to it the next day and you add to it. And then a few days later, you come back to it and you look at it and say, wow, what are the top, you know, two or three things that jump off the page at me? That needs to tell me something. That needs to inform how I go forward and what goals I set and what choices I make with the riding that I am doing. Because if I'm completely out of sync, if the horse I ride or the lessons I'm taking or the shows I'm entering are out of sync with what my core motivation of being there in the first place is, I'm going to make myself very unhappy, right? So let's identify, let you help yourself kind of understand where's that motivation, where's it coming from, and let me then go ahead and support myself and make some really smart and wise choices from there. And I think that'll give you a different sense of peace and understanding and hopefully pleasure. Cause you know, the barn should be a fun place. It sounds like it's a really tumultuous and tough right now. And I totally feel for you.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to compete. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. There's, you know, you can enjoy your horse and be like the 90% of the people out there in the world who don't compete. You know, it's funny because they tried to get me into doing CDEs and competition with carriages and all of that. And it's like, I don't want to do that. That's not why I enjoy puttering with my horses, and that's okay.
Right.
You know, and that's,
and it's weird because like I like competing too. It's just, I don't know, recently in the last 4 years, I've been discouraged.
Well, and that doesn't mean that's going to change and that now you're going to putter for a while and you're just going to enjoy being with your horses and playing around. And that doesn't mean that in another 5 years you won't be competing again. You know, just because you're not doing it now doesn't mean you won't be doing it then. We all change over time. And, you know, things are going to change 50 more times for you. So, boy, Tanya, very well, very well done. And Ann, thank you for being so honest and for calling in about that. That's tough.
Yeah.
Thanks, you guys. Ann. It actually helped a lot.
Good.
Oh, good. I'm glad, Ann. Take care. And keep in touch for sure, okay?
If all else fails, buy a pony that bolts. It'll cure everything. You'll be fine. All right?
Glenn, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I subscribe to that.
But I can send you one, Ann. I could send one up. Scooter would be happy to make the journey.
My family would kill me.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, Ann.
Happy holidays, Ann. Okay.
Happy holidays. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Oh, that's funny. You know, I feel for her because that's what, you know, a lot of people go through those changes, that time when all of a sudden things have changed mentally and physically and everything. And the outside expectations are still there.
Right.
But you have to take a step back and just go, okay, I just need to accept where I am right now. And that's sometimes so hard to do, right?
It is. And you have to, well, and like we were just saying, you know, before you can accept where you are right now, you got to know where it is. So sometimes, you know, we've just operated on so many assumptions about what got us into the sport or what used to fire us up. It's, and when we don't sort of take that time to, it's almost like I almost like people doing that like annually, honestly, because that way, you know, and this is a great time of year to do that before January kicks off and everyone gets all, okay, gung-ho. Like, let's make sure we understand where the gung-ho is coming from, where that passion is really sitting and what's sort of driving you. And then you can do good things with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it is going to change 50 more times for everybody.
It really does. It's just, it changes throughout our lives.
You know what, though? Yep. When I heard her at the beginning, I was listening very carefully to what she was saying. And when I heard her at the beginning, I think she already knows. She already knew. And I could tell as she was talking about it, it was hitting her that she already knows. She was kind of figuring it out for herself through that. And it's probably what happens with a lot of your clients is they kind of figure it out for themselves as they're talking to you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not coming in and telling them anything. I'm just giving them sort of the space to sort through the intuition that they have. Absolutely. And the tools to kind of uncover that sometimes.
Well, let's change gears a little bit. Very well done. We're going to try and get Victoria on the line, of course, with Horse and Country TV. But I just got a message from her that she is sitting in traffic trying to get to Olympia right now, which is, of course, their huge horse show over there.
Oh,
and
right.
So I'm going to try and give her a call live on the air here to see if we can get her on her cell phone. Because she was not planning on being in this much traffic, I don't think, in London. But this is a huge
kind of adds
show.
An exciting element to it, though. She's right in the thick of things. Yeah,
she always is too. She's always at the you know, at a place that has the queen or something going on. Wow. But I'm not sure we'll be able to get her either. That's the other problem. I'm not sure that we'll get through to her phone, but I'm trying.
Is that Olympia? I don't know much about that show, but I think isn't it one of those sort of all breed?
Yes.
Like everything is there. Yeah.
Yes. And it's huge. I didn't
get
her.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Let me try one more time, but I'm not sure she's going to be able to answer. I'm not sure if she has any reception either. That's the other thing. And if not, we'll just we'll have you deal with some more questions here that we have from listeners. Okay. Yep. I'm not getting an answer. I don't think it went through.
Okay.
So let me.
Yeah, she might be in tricky reception area.
But She'll be on next week. She'll be back one more time. Victoria will be back next week one more time with us before she heads off to have a baby. And we're going to be sorry to see her go. Victoria's been with us since we started this show 6 years ago and has been with us almost every Wednesday since, and she's just delightful. So we're hoping That's to amazing. Find a replacement. We're working on that right now.
Yeah.
Well, we also have another big announcement. Got confirmation yesterday that we are a go on the WEG show. We did, for 2010, when the Horse Radio Network first started back in 2008, one of the things I really wanted to do, because we lived in Lexington, was do a World Equestrian Games radio show. And we did.
Oh, wow.
My co-host Samantha Clark from the eventing side of things, her and I did it for 2 years leading up to the 2010, and then we did a daily show during WEG. It was a blast. We covered all the sports, and we talked to people from all the sports. And we're going to be doing that again starting in January. We're going to have a 2018 a radio show. Samantha will be back. We nailed down a title sponsor. So that's terrific. Kentucky Performance Products has agreed to be the title sponsor on that show. We'll be doing it twice a month, all the way through WEG. We're going to be twice a month instead of weekly this time. And then during WEG, we'll be doing a daily show like we did before. And we're giddy over getting back together once. Samantha and I haven't done a show together for 6 years now. And it was just so much fun because it's kind of that thrilling, exciting thing, right?
Yeah, so special.
And it's here, so right up the street.
Yeah.
So that's going to be cool, too.
That's awesome.
Yep.
So you talk with folks from every discipline that'll be represented? Yeah.
Yep. We had riders. That's what we had highlight riders. We picked a rider from every discipline that had not been to a WEG before, but that was really trying to get there. So of all the seven disciplines that we did, some of them made it, some didn't. And then we covered them during the event, too. One of them that actually has gone on to be really successful and quite famous is Jessica Phoenix from Canada in the eventing world. Jessica, who's now been to multiple Olympics and things, she was just an up-and-comer, hadn't really done anything big. And we kind of, I don't know how we found Jessica, but she's been friends ever since. And we had so much fun being at WEG with her and following her progress. And then some of the people we had highlighted didn't make it. They didn't qualify. And that's just part of the world, right?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
It's part of what we do. And it's part of what the sport is. So that's why we picked people who hadn't been before. It was kind of that first journey for them.
Right. How interesting. So, that's awesome. Wait, can we just, for a second, what are the seven disciplines again?
Oh, here, you're going to test me. Now you're going to test me.
I know,
it's eventing, dressage.
Yeah, okay,
It's the three Olympic sports, eventing, dressage, and jumping. And then you had driving, which is four-in-hand driving. Now, they've been talking about lowering that to also include pairs. But right now, it's limited to four-in-hand drivers, which usually they have 30 or 40. And by the way, if you're booking tickets now, you have to go to the four-in-hand during the marathon, during the cross-country. I don't know if you've ever seen that. But
I have seen. Oh, I've seen pictures for sure. I've never seen it live, but it's amazing what they get these horses through.
Yes. It's just incredible.
Unbelievable.
You think eventing is crazy during cross country, you have to see the drivers driving up four horses.
Yeah.
It's just nuts.
Yeah, I've seen some of like the big and the mazes and the tricky turns they have, and then there's water and like mud
it's
and the
crazy.
Side of it. I'm like, oh my God.
And they're going through spaces when you're walking through it, you go, how are they bringing a carriage and four horses through this? It's just incredible. Hey, I think we have Victoria with us. Victoria, are you there?
I'm here. I am. I'm here.
Oh, you sound very far away. We can barely hear
How's
you.
How's the traffic?
It's bad. I'm queuing to get into the show. So this is the joys of having a show in central London, because you get horse show traffic and London traffic at the same time.
Are you on a speaker,
oh my goodness.
Victoria? Can you go off a speaker or not?
I'm on my headset, so I can't really. It's a really bad line.
Yep, gotcha. And you're heading over to, we were just talking a little bit about Olympia. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's held right in the middle of West London, in a very kind of busy urban place. And there's a big exhibition hall with a huge glass ceiling. And that's where they have this annual Christmas show. And they have dressage and driving and show jumping and showing and displays and a Christmas finale. So it's a really popular event at this time of year.
Sounds awesome. I'd love to go.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. It's one of the ones to go to, one of the highlights of Britain, Britain's Equestrian Calendar.
Yeah.
And there's a certain special somebody that's going to be there that's drawing all the attention this year.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. I'm on my way in to go and interview Miss Charlotte Dujardin, who, of course, is retiring Villegro tonight. She did a little appearance at yesterday's show, which Jenny Riddle, our regular presenter, was there to watch. And she just basically came out and they did a short Q&A. And he got a standing ovation, and that wasn't even his official retirement. So aww. I can imagine tonight there's going to be tears, there's going to be a sellout crowd. And poor Charlotte, I think, is going to have done about 50 interviews today. So, I'm hoping she's not run out of words by the time I get there.
Are they going to do their Olympic freestyle? Is that what they're going to do?
Yeah, and she obviously did a Rio-themed one for this summer, but she said she's going to do one of her Olympic freestyles. So because obviously they had the very famous one in London 2012 when they used all the kind of British iconic songs, and then she had music from the film How to Train Your Dragon, and I'd say those two are a little bit more iconic than the Rio one. I think people just remember them more, so I'm personally holding out for the London 2012 music. I think it's really special and it will bring back amazing memories.
Oh, it's so great.
What else are you looking forward to on this trip?
Well, we've got some amazing top-class show jumping with all the best guys in the world, including several Brits like Scott Brash and John and Michael Whitaker. And so it's a really nice show, and all the show jumpers are in party mode because it's the end of the season. The big ones are, of course, the World Cup qualifier and then the Grand Prix. And we've also got the pre-sons, which is fun to watch. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm heading there all full of Olympia enthusiasm. And by Monday, I might be a little bit tired of Christmas music and crowds and all the people doing their shopping. But at the moment, I'm very excited.
Is it a big shopping thing too? Is it a big shopping venue?
Yeah, huge. And I do all my Christmas shopping before I get to the show because I'm busy working, as you can imagine, and I do find it quite crowded. And because we're working, we want to get everywhere in a hurry. And Jenny, my colleague, she's as well as being a TV presenter, she's run yards, and Jenny and I do everything at a million miles per hour, so actually having to walk at crowd shopping speed really infuriates us. So I've done all my Christmas shopping and I'm trying to stay away, and obviously, as we talked about last week, I'm quitting riding for a few months while I have my first baby, so no shopping for little Rosie either.
Well, that actually probably is helpful. You can carry more for others.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They can spend money and I will be sensible.
Now, will you, do they also have all the other crazy things they do at British shows, like the Shetland pony racing and all of that stuff too?
They do, so that'll be exciting. So they have Shetland pony, and then they have different displays every year. So I can't remember what they all are this year because they vary. But apparently there's a Spanish dressage guy this year, and lots of other things happening. So that's always really cool. But they have a Christmas finale, which is really nice. And if you ask any of the famous riders, they'll have all either been in the Christmas finale when they were little, or their children have been part of it. So there's ponies, and there's all these different displays and music, and then they always sing the first Noel, and that properly signals the start of Christmas. Until I hear that, I don't feel Christmassy. But then when I've heard it for 14 times, by that time I'm like, oh, it's the Christmas finale again. So a bit of a mix, really.
And do the royals show up? Do they come?
I haven't seen any. There's quite a lot of private boxes in the press offices there. So as we're kind of burrowing away, working and typing our reports, all the people in private boxes are there in black tie having a lovely dinner while watching the show. So it's a little bit different, their experience to ours. So maybe you get a few royals hiding in there.
That's funny. Well, thank you, Victoria, for stopping by inside your car in line to get into to the show.
I'm currently letting about 60 small children cross the road in front of me, so I better go and concentrate again. But yeah, no, great to chat to you, and looking forward to chatting to you next week for the final time before Christmas.
All right, will do. Thanks, Victoria. Horseandcountry.tv. Appreciate Thanks. You stopping by.
Bye. Have fun.
Bye. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to miss Victoria. I'm getting all weepy-eyed here because I'm going to miss her so much. She's just been such a part of the show since we started.
Yeah, she's lovely. I wish we were talking to her in 3 hours when she was inside.
I know.
We're getting an eagle-eye report. Yes.
Sounds like you don't get in her way, though. She'll run your butt over. Well,
she's got serious shopping to do. If you don't get in her way, exactly.
Okay, I got him. Combined driving, dressage, endurance, eventing, para-equestrian, reining, show jumping, and vaulting.
Right.
And you know which one I got the most respect for? Or not the most respect for, but more respect for when I was there the last time? Because Samantha and I actually flipped a coin to see who got to cover vaulting. And we were just like, because neither one of we all wanted to go out and do jumping and stuff, but
right.
It was like one of us has to cover vaulting. So I said, so we flipped a coin, I lost, and I went to cover vaulting, and I actually was fascinated by it. Now, it could be because I was sitting down for the first time in 16 days, and it was comfy, and we had good chairs in there. It was music playing. I might have napped a time or two. And what I found was all of the reporters who wanted a break went and covered vaulting because it was a couple hours sitting and just watching, and it was comfy. And actually, they are true athletes, the vaulters.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
I've done actually clinics with vaulters, and I've just learned some about the sport. And boy, it is just such a physically demanding and precision, like intensive, you know, sport. It's just remarkable what they can do. And the strength.
It is.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
It is.
Because you know what I was forgetting of was that the endurance was included in the wig.
Oh, and that's crazy,
that's
too. If you've never seen the beginning of a competitive endurance race like that, it is nuts. That was one of the things I was most surprised by of all the events. We covered all of them. And that was the thing I was most surprised by was the beginning of endurance, where they all set out, all of them in a great big heap, 100 of them, and they set out at a dead run. I mean, it's like it's a sprint. And it was crazy. I was like, they're going to kill each other in the first 100 yards.
It's a little scary. Yeah, definitely. And I know that that's a sport that's had some trials and tribulations across the world of just the horse welfare aspect. But the people that are really into it and who are so smart, they're so into the science of it and how to keep their horses optimally traveling for that length of time. It's really fascinating what goes into that at the upper levels, you know.
It is, and there is a lot of science involved. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had a great time covering pretty much everything, and we got to know so many of the paras, and we did some fundraisers for the paras, and they try so hard, and it was so much fun going down to watch them ride, and they get kind of equal billing, so that's neat. You know, they're there with everybody else, and
fantastic.
And you know, they don't want to be treated special; they want to be treated like riders, and they are riders, and you know, they want to be in there with everybody else, and that was what was so cool about the WEG is they are there. So that was cool too.
Really cool.
Well, how about another question or two before we let you go? Now, remind everybody what your website is again.
It's my name. So it's TanyaJohnston.com is my website.
And can people hire you, Tanya? Can they hire you for one-on-one private sessions too?
Yes, that's what I do. That's the bulk of my practice is individuals. So I work with people on the phone. Sometimes I will Skype or FaceTime, but that absolutely, even with people here in the Bay Area, just with traffic and commute times and everything else, I just find that being able to set up appointments on the phone is super, super helpful and facilitates good consistency, you know?
And how
so it's
does
not
that
like,
work?
Oh, there was an accident on the bridge. I'm not going to make my appointment, or, you know, that kind of thing. So
how does that work?
Yeah.
If I called you and said, okay, I got this issue, and I want, you know, or whatever, or just in general, I want to be a better mental rider. How do you set it up? Is it a certain number of appointments, or how does that work for people that are curious?
Yeah, I have different packages that I do with 4-session packages or 8-session packages. And definitely in the beginning of working with someone, the consistency is valuable because I want to get to know them. We want to sort of develop a mutually understood language, because it's really more important for me to understand how they think and talk to themselves and the way they frame things. It's not a cookie cutter kind of thing where I just have a program that I run people through. Do you know what I mean? So it's really valuable for me to understand their perspective and to help them build the tools that I can teach. How do we build those realistically into the routines that they already have, you know, so they're more apt to be useful and they're more apt to actually remember them and do them, you know? It's no good if we do a bunch of stuff that then they forget or just isn't realistic for them.
Well, let's do you want to do one or two more quick ones here before listener questions? I love this one.
Sure.
How do I get a decent night's sleep before a big event? Can I recommend alcohol?
No, we're trying to. No, we need to wake up and be on it. We need to wake up and have good energy.
So tequila's definitely not a good choice then. Tequila's out.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. I would limit screen time. Make sure you're not on your phone or your iPad. That definitely prevents you from getting a really good night's sleep. And also making sure that that you're doing something physical in the evening, even going for a walk, being outside. You know, a lot of times people start anticipating the horse show, or, you know, they've planned and they've worked so hard and then they start getting in their head. It's useful to, you know, go for a walk, get some of that energy out, and then do something different. Don't think about horses. What can you watch, like a funny, you know, if you are going to do some screen time earlier in the evening, you know, watch a funny movie or read a book that takes you away. Talk to people who are not necessarily horse people, like just reminding yourself like, okay, this is in the greater context of my life, and sometimes we put so much import on it, it becomes like this big heavy weight, and then it's very hard to fall asleep with a big boulder on your chest. So it's good to do some other things and get into a routine, a sort of sleep routine, as they say. But
okay,
and definitely we go back to the old, you know, have a cup of tea or something warm, cozy, all that kind of good stuff too. This is the last I will say on this. I think there's a couple other questions we want to get to, but when you have like worries or concerns about a competition, or there's a lot of what ifs running around your head, it's useful if you do, for lack of a better term, I sometimes call this a brain dump, where you just take a piece of paper, you just write down everything you're worried about. Like, okay, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if that happens? You just get it all out of your head onto paper, and then you like leave the paper somewhere. Like, okay, I've written them down. I don't need to keep thinking about it over and over again because I've got them. And if there's something I need to come back to tomorrow, I will, but I don't need to be like with the hamster wheel in my head all night.
Right.
Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
It totally helps, because sometimes we keep thinking about things because we're worried, okay, oh, I have to remember this or I have to remember that. So write it down. And then
that applies to anything you're worried about. It doesn't matter whether it's riding or not.
Yeah. Give yourself a break.
Finances even. You know, Jennifer and I have had those situations. It's like, oh, what are we going to do? And it's like, okay, let's write everything down.
Yeah.
And you know, not only does it give you a plan, you're right. It just takes it out of your head and you're going, okay, well, I have it written down. It's right here. I don't need to have it in there anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm allowed. And then you can allow yourself to take a little break, take a mental break, which is what sleep is, it should be rest, right?
Yeah.
We don't want to lay down and still be thinking about all these stressors. So, anyway,
and if all of that fails, just Benadryl, maybe? Maybe Benadryl instead of
No,
wine? No,
okay. Glenn,
right,
no.
Okay. You know, Avery said a couple bottles of wine usually helps me. So I don't know. I wasn't going that far. Okay.
Avery, I just don't know how well you're riding in the morning with that kind of
hangover
strategy at night. Yeah.
Well, and we all know that riders do it.
Yeah,
we've
I know.
All seen the riders do it. Yep. You were in the hunter jumper world. You have especially seen the riders.
Well, people come to me and say, "All right, well, how do you know?" In the old this happened more when I was first starting out. They'd say, "Well, I have a couple of mimosas in the morning before I show."
In the morning,
and I'd be like, "All right, yes." And so then they would come to me and say, "Yeah, I don't want to have to do that anymore. Help me." And I'd say, "Okay, yes, let's get you some ideas in addition or instead of." The mimosa idea.
Yeah. Something
let's
that's not 40 proof.
No, I know. My gosh.
Although I will say this. When we used to own an acting company and we did shows for 10 years. I played a king. And every show, it was written in that I had to have a strawberry daiquiri before we started.
Goodness. That was your rider. What do they call that?
Yeah, that's right. Because it loosened me up. I got loosened up. The strawberry daiquiri, one was just enough. Two was too many. But one was enough. You
that's
know,
hilarious.
Tanya, I do a lot of consulting now in the podcasting world. And this is next question is something that I run into with people who are looking at doing podcasts or doing anything. I've run into this with salespeople, and that's the overanalyzers. And Avery asked, how do I get out of the overthinking stage and just do it? I tend to get stuck in the education materials and feel like I have to fully grasp the material before I try it with the horse because I'm afraid of not doing it right. And this is true of so many things in life, not just horses, but everything. And those overthinkers tend to be overthinkers for everything. The problem with it is, and I try to identify these quickly because I don't spend a whole lot of time with them then because I realize they're never getting out of that phase. They never actually get to get it done. So what do you do with the overthinker? And I've never had good luck dealing with the overthinkers.
Yeah. I mean, the thing for sure, I hope that the overthinker has good counsel because they can be guided toward their priorities. If they don't trust themselves or they need help sort of picking two or three things to narrow it down to me, the overthinker is thinking of a hundred things, right? And so let's help them, you know, my goal is to help them pick like two or three goals. Like, okay, you can't go in the ring with 20 things on your list. So For Avery, I would say, all right, for anything you're about to work on, whether it's, okay, I'm going to do my trot work now. All right, so here are my top two things that I want to think about. Okay, so that Avery, you ask yourself, how can I narrow this down? Maybe it's just for the day. Maybe it's just for today. These are the two things. It doesn't have to be like the end all be all, but for each ride, you definitely want to give yourself that opportunity to prioritize.
Well, and I think too, what she's saying here, reading into it, is she's saying that she's afraid of not doing it right. So there's a little bit of, I'm not going to do it at all until I'm sure. I have watched every video and I'm sure, but you know what? We learn by doing it, not by, you know, you can learn the fundamentals about reading about something, but you never actually really figure it out till you do something.
Right. And it's an acceptance that mistakes are a part of that. So the overthinker is trying to avoid mistakes by giving themselves 100, you know, things to do and thinking that if I think about all these 100 things, I won't make a mistake. And so really we need to kind of go into each ride and the process with our horses with, mistakes will be made and I will learn and be better for them. They are not going to take me backwards. A lot of people think making a mistake takes them backwards in their progress. It absolutely does not. It lets you know where you are. And when you figure out how to fix that mistake, you're that much further ahead. So that's a big acceptance piece too. I also would have a transition cue between the thinking, the analysis. Sometimes this happens for people at shows too. They're at the back gate and they're going over their plan and they're in their sort of analysis assessment mode. And you gotta switch gears. There's gotta be something you do that lets you know, okay, now it's time to perform. So I'm switching out of my head and into just being able to be in the moment, trust myself, trust my horse, and really just feel what's going on. So whether that's taking a breath and really thinking about your exhale, whether it's, you know, shaking out your hands, whether it's even sometimes something as simple as looking up at the sky and looking back down at a target and being like, okay, that's where I'm headed. This is what we're doing. Anything like that, but something that is a transition, like I said, between thinking about it versus doing it. So when you have a clear transition moment, it can be helpful for that the overthinker who tends to drag all those thoughts with them, and then they become distractions and actually get in the way of riding effectively in the moment.
Yeah, sometimes actually you can learn too much.
Exactly.
You know, and I know that sounds weird, but it's true.
Yeah. And you can learn things that maybe are not appropriate for your level right then. That's where you need that help. You need someone to help say, okay, yes, maybe, you know, thinking about how to get your horse to do a lead change is important, but you know what? Right now, we're just trying to get you to the other side of the jump. So let's get to the other side of the jump first. Then we'll worry about the lead change in a couple of months when we're doing that really well. You know what I mean? That's what your trainer's for. That's what your coach
exactly.
is for.
It's like, true. Jennifer's laughing because she used to be a coach.
Right? Yeah. Let's break it down and prioritize and one step at a time. So
yeah, because the overthinkers are thinking about the whole dressage test. They're not just thinking about let's get to the center line and salute. You know, they've got the whole dressage test in there, and they're not taking it one step at a time. Plus, you know, and I think Jennifer nailed it too. Fear of failure. That's something that I taught sales for years. Boy, there's nobody that's more afraid of failure than salespeople that are just starting out.
Because that's true.
Jennifer,
I can imagine that.
This is one we back in the day when I used to teach a lot. We called this talking yourself out of riding. First, let's conquer, go to the barn. Okay, we conquered that. Let's conquer, put the tack on. Okay, yay, we conquered that. Don't worry about whether or not you can get shoulder in today. Just get the daggone tack on the horse and sit down. Yay, woohoo, the party.
Yeah, break that down. I like it.
Yeah, but that's true. Yep. I mean, that's what it comes down to, is breaking it down into those tiny steps.
Exactly.
And let's deal with one of those steps, or two of those steps, or at the most, three of those steps today. We'll deal with the rest of that stuff tomorrow.
Yes. Trusting that you can only do that. You can only have so much progress or so much on your plate on any one day. And you got to trust the process. You got to trust that this is one step in the ladder.
You know, it's funny if when we started the Horse Radio Network, I didn't have this problem because there was nothing to study. We were I've always been the one that's wanted to do everything first, so I never had this problem. I always was forced to jump into the deep end with both feet because I didn't have anything to look at. There was nothing to study, and that is one of the things when you're kind of leading something and really figuring it out as you go. You don't have that problem. I've never really had that problem because I'm not a big thinker either. So that's it.
That's funny.
But the Horse Radio Network wouldn't be here today if we just hadn't jumped in and figured it out. Yes, we made 1,000 mistakes that cost us thousands of dollars, but we never made them again. So
there you go. And now you're teaching other people how not to make it. Yeah.
Right. But you know what? Some of it you just got, and it's what you said. Some of this, everybody's going to learn for themselves. I don't care what book you read, you're still going to make the mistake, and you're still going to figure it out for yourself.
Yeah.
There's just certain fundamentals that you've got to figure out for yourself. You can have a little more knowledge going in, but you're still going to make the mistake at some point.
Right. You're
still going to chip the jump. You're still going to jump too long. You're still going to do all of those things that everybody does.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think what we were talking about, that fear of making a being a failure or of making a mistake is part of the cycle, the thinking loop of the overthinker for sure. So
my friend Dave Jackson has a saying. He says, you know, after you make the mistake, nobody's going to smack you in the face. That's his favorite saying. Go ahead, make the mistake. Nobody's going to smack you in the face. And probably the only one that noticed was you. So
that's funny. That's a little aggro, but I think that's true. Yeah. I'm sure that's probably true. Yeah. Sure.
Yep. Well, Tanya, thank you so much. I'm so looking forward to having you on once a month on the Horse Radio Network. Now you'll be over on the brand new show, the Plaidcast.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for your support and being so welcoming. I'm really looking forward to it.
And you did a terrific job today. You good? First time.
Yay.
Woohoo. See, you overcome your fears. You came
thank
on.
Thank you. That was fun.
We threw you in the deep end live show. Normally, people, we don't throw them in the live show first, but we knew you could handle it.
Well, I hope that we have this much fun when we're doing my show, and I'm sure we will. And I'm really looking forward to it. And I keep thinking of little ideas and writing them down.
Oh, good.
So I'm getting a nice list of different things to do. And thank you for teaching me. And I look forward to continuing to learn about podcasting and how to keep everyone engaged. And it's just a great medium to be getting involved in. So I'm really excited.
Oh, I'll let you make a few mistakes too. So,
yes. Yeah. Oh, that's a part of the process. I am happy. I will make them with a smile on my face. Like, woo, that didn't work. Okay, next.
Thank you, Tanya. Oh, it's Tanya Johnston. That's with the STON at the end, TanyaJohnston.com. We will be back tomorrow's the trail riding episode with the NATRC with Jennifer and Alice will be here. And then Friday, we have a very special thing going on, actually, that same guy was talking about that said nobody will smack you in the face. He's going to be here, and he's kind of, for me, Friday is going to be kind of like the principal sitting in on the show. Your school principal, because Dave Jackson is the god of podcasting. He's been around longer than I have, and he runs the School of Podcasting, actually. He's kind of the one that everybody turns to. He knows everything, and he's going to be here in the studio. He's coming up with the film crew for the Messengers movie, which is a movie that they're doing about podcasting and highlighting the Horse Radio Network in it. They were here once before, and they have to come back for some more footage, and Dave just happened to be in town, so he's coming along. He loves actually listening to our Friday Horses in the Morning because he loves Really Bad Ads. So he's going to be here for Really Bad Ads, and we told him we'd get to do a couple. So we're going to have a whole studio full of people and cameras and everything on Friday morning, and we will have Lisa Wysocki, the author, will be with us filling in for Jamie, and then Jamie will be back next Monday. So that's what's coming up the rest of the week. Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you. Have a great rest of the day.
All right, we'll see you, everybody.
Okay, bye, everyone.